you know, it did really well. Like it kept us relevant in that mid 2000s kind of weird time. It was kind of like, you know, a slowing down of times. That's the one that, like I said, it kind of kicked off our second chapter, and it kind of made us the band that we are today, I think.
Talking Records Podcast, Talking Records Podcast, Talking Records Podcast. We talk about our favorite records, Talking Records Podcast. We're so glad you tuned in. Thank you all for listening. You showed up to the right place. Jed and his friends dive deep and analyze the records we have grown to love. We'll tell you how we found the band, then give you a track-by-track breakdown of all the songs. So grab your favorite beverage and pull up a seat. Today we'll look at another record in its entirety.
Hello, what's up everyone? My name is Jed and you're listening to Talking Records, an album deep dive podcast where we choose records and then go dig up everything we can about them. Why? Why not? If you're like me and my good friend Craig here, the backstories and knowledge of how an album was made adds to your enjoyment. Well, you've come to the right place. Craig, you've come to the right place. Welcome back to Talking Records, man.
Oh, Jed, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me again. I am so excited to be back on the podcast. And let's have some fun with this one.
Well, I'm thrilled that you're back here, Craig. It's always a good time talking music with you. You and I go way back.
We do. We go quite some time.
We have been listening to music together, going to shows, trading albums, talking up bands for as long as I can remember.
We go back to the 90s. And when you talk about the 90s now, it's just like, wow, that was so long ago.
But yeah, time ago.
We've been listening to some of these bands for quite some time now and bonding over them too.
Absolutely. And so, Craig, in a moment, we'll be joined by Jake Kiley of Strung Out to talk about Strung Out's 2004 album, Exile and Oblivion. But I want to take you back for a minute. I want to see if you remember the first time you and I heard this record.
Oh, you're gonna press my memory, aren't you?
Yeah.
All right. Let's hear it. What do you got?
You know, as you know from the last time we talked about Strung Out, you know, I got into the band in 96 through Survival of the Fattest. Mm-hmm. The band was obviously one of the standouts on that disc, and it wasn't long before I was rounding up their music. I remained a fan. Throughout the late 90s, you and I were big fans of the band. We talk a lot about Strung Out. And into the 2000s, you know, still love the band. They still were releasing great music. I had loved American Paradox. And, you know, just all that technical guitar stuff,
sure.
Fast tempos. I know you and I always liked the heavier songs, and we'd always get excited when they would put like a hardcore tune on there.
They always had some great breakdowns, like quick breakdowns, but they weren't like long drawn out. They was like boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
Get you all amped up, and then they'd move on, like into the next part of the song. It's like, yes.
Right.
Anyway, yeah, go ahead.
So, Craig, November of 2004.
November 2004.
Yeah. Our band, No Intention, was wrapping up a pretty good year of shows that year. And
that was the year for our band.
2003, 2002, those were all really great years. Yeah. 2004 was like the last big hurrah, I feel like, because after that it was, you know, trying to make it. But anyway, I bring it up because it was before a show in our hometown. We were playing with the Voodoo Glow Skulls.
Yes.
Big D and the Kids Table. Yep. Go Betty Go. Remember that band?
Go Betty. Yeah, I remember that. I don't remember them, but I remember the name.
Yeah. All great bands. Huge show in our hometown. But all we could think about was the new Strung Out album, Exile and Oblivion. We're out in your van. We're all outside. We're in your van, right? And you put in the new Strung Out CD. I hadn't heard it yet. And you put it on. And Billie Holiday? All of a sudden, I'm hearing Billie Holiday. And I thought you were messing with us. Because you do that.
I'm a prankster.
You are. So, you know, before I could whap you upside the head, though, the opening guitar chords, the analog came in.
Oh, yeah, it just punches right in right there.
And, yeah, I mean, that first song just crashes in, and off we went, man. And we just sat in your van for like 45 minutes, because it's kind of a long record. It's like 45 minutes.
I think, yeah, it's like 44, 45, yeah.
And we just sat there, and we just listened to the whole thing out in the parking lot of this show we were supposed to be playing.
So we were supposed to be watching the other bands before us, and we were just sitting there listening to this album.
Probably would have been decent if we went and supported it. Well, let's be honest. We were probably the opening band on that show.
That's probably true, yeah. So we sound checked and went back out to the van.
Exactly. We just had to hear it. I couldn't
wait
to hear it.
I think I remember that. sitting in the van, and like I vaguely remember the like, dude, are you messing with me right now? What the hell is this you're playing?
Yeah, I remember like complaining about it, and Josh, our bassist, was in the front seat. He turns around, he goes, "What, are you dissing Billie Holiday?" I was like, "No, but I thought we were listening to Strung Out here."
Oh man, that's funny.
But I remember
that's
thinking
awesome.
That was pretty cool. I was like, "All right, that's cool. I'm into it." You know?
Oh man, that's funny. That's good. The memories.
Yeah, man. I remember just sitting there, like commenting on the riffs and the drum parts, just like breaking it down. I mean, we love this stuff so much. And for me, like this album has that memory attached to it. You know, sitting in your van before the show, listening to the album for the first time, and just loving it, and laughing and talking and having a good time. What's better than that?
I think listening to the album before our show was probably one of the best things we could have ever done, because this band was such an inspiration to our musical style, you know, my drumming style and anything like that. You know, listening to the album, getting all amped up, and then going in there and ripping a show.
Yeah.
That was a great night.
Well, let's be real. By 2004, we had slowed way down. But remember, 2002, we were one of the faster bands. I mean, we looked to Strung Out to be like, if these guys can play this fast, we're going to play that fast.
I can remember distinctly playing some shows and you're like, I can't sing that fast.
No.
Slow down, Craig.
No. All right, Craig. Well, I could reminisce all night, but I think we got to get into this interview with Jake about Exile. So let's do that.
Let's do it. Let's dive in.
We are pleased to welcome guitarist Jake to the show. How's it going, Jake?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing well.
Doing pretty well.
It's good
welcome
to have
back
you
back to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me again.
Yeah, we had fun last time.
Absolutely. Yeah, I love this stuff. It's fun.
Jake, we were just talking offline a second ago, and you had mentioned you hadn't listened to this album in a little while, and you went back and listened to it. And so that, since you've just re-listened to it again, going back in your brain on this album would have been your fifth album. What was the approach trying to push forward and come back with the sound of this album?
Yeah, I think we were still in an experimental kind of phase right here. Like Exile and Oblivion was definitely like, it was kind of a rebirth for us in some ways, we felt, where Element of Sonic Defiance, that record really was like a big jump from Twisted by Design. And a lot of that had to do with, you know, we had parted ways with Jim, and, you know, some of us just ended up picking up a lot more of the writing and creating some stuff, which we probably wouldn't have ever come up with if Jim had stayed in the band. So that record, we really just kind of started doing a different thing, kind of brought it back more to the classic Strung Out sound on American Paradox. But then also felt like when we did that, we always felt like we were going backwards in a sense. And compared to like all the other stuff that came out in like 2001, 2002, like, you know, what Thrice was up to, Poison the Well, like all this like brutal, gnarly shit started coming out. And I remember listening to American Paradox going, oh shit, like really? Like, is this the fucking best we could do right now? And it just got trampled on by all those gnarly fucking records. So we just wanted to make something that, like, you know, was a bit gnarlier, a little more experimental, a little more original. And I don't know, I think Exile, you know, it almost was the predecessor, or, you know, the continuer of Element of Sonic Defiance, I feel, in some ways. And yeah, it's almost like it jumped over, you know, American Paradox to that. And then I think that record kind of shaped us after that. You know, what we did with Exile, I think we're still kind of more that band today than we were before that record.
Yeah, you definitely hear it going forward for sure.
So it was kind of a response to just stuff that we were, you know, feeling and sensing in music and in ourselves, and wanting to stay current, but also it's just wanting to stay creative. And we had a heavy kind of sound in us. Like, we were always big fans of like metal and like some really heavy shit that, you know, maybe your standard average punk band doesn't really incorporate too much. So we kind of took what was going on and said, well, you know what, this kind of gives us a green light to just be more heavy creative than try to just stay a fat records band or something. Like, it really kind of gave us a green light to just throw off anything and just try to create a, you know, we didn't worry about writing something like analog, like, you know, it's like borderline thrashy and like,
yeah,
I don't know, like that would have probably gotten shut down in the old days, but we were just like, fuck it, let's start the record with that, you know?
So I know for me, listening to the album, that like it still holds up today.
Thank you.
And you just went back and listened to it. What do you think? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too. I think it kind of like, you know, I don't know, I don't hear a lot of shit coming out this year that is doing what that record did, even, you know, not to like, whatever, there's better records out there. Yeah, I'm pretty proud of like what it did and like where it sits today.
Yeah, definitely. And I think a lot of the guitar riffs were starting to come into their own in that album, where you can definitely feel that presence of that underlying, or even maybe the overlying guitar, you know, coming in with different, you know,
yeah, I think so,
solos and stuff.
Totally. And I think that's kind of, like I said, we were very like witnessing what was going on, you know, like the dudes in Thrice, we did a bunch of shows with them in like 2003. And it was like, wow, here's a band that's like really pushing it, you know? And you had like a Ben Sevenfold, even stuff like that, where it was just like, whoa, like there's solos in this fucking scene now. Like that wasn't happening in the 90s. We were kind of pushing the envelope with guitar solos in 1998, 99. And like, we weren't even fucking good. Like I had stopped trying to play solos basically just to try to become a better rhythm player. So like, yeah. Suddenly it was like all these dudes were playing and it was like, whoa, okay. Like it sounds like guitar's kind of back in a lot of ways. So fuck it. I'm not done. I got a lot of shit I can put into this. So, you know, me and Chris also like was very, you know, he's a great guitar player as well. So he was very inspired to kind of like, you know, write some cool guitar type parts. So he wrote a lot of analog, wrote a lot of, you know, I mean, I can't think of all the parts right off the bat, but we all wrote a lot of cool guitar parts for that record. Rob as well, of course. So, you know, I think it was kind of feeling the gloves were off and like, okay, like maybe we used to feel like we were on the edge of soloing too much, but now that's not even the standard anymore. Like now there's all kinds of dudes soloing and just not more than soloing, just really putting cool guitar work in there and really interesting stuff more than bar chords and octaves, which was kind of the standard in the 90s. Like you didn't find a whole lot of bands that were doing outside of that, you know. I mean, of course there were, but we were very much just, it was all about fast, tight fucking bar chord fucking riffs and stuff like that. All those little like taking apart the bar chords, you know, and just kind of like that was just like 80% of our songs. And then we just kind of switched to where like, let's actually write riffs, you know, let's write some fucking riffs in here. So yeah, it became kind of more, yeah, the riffs I think took more of a front or stage.
For sure.
I would say that it almost felt you guys kind of doubled down on that, because in the early 2000s, I mean, there was a lot of that emo screamo stuff that just kind of burst out. Yeah. And I feel like as a band, you could have really taken two different paths, right? You could have kind of catered to that and like tried to do that to like fit in, or you could have been like, nah, we're going to go harder. I felt like you guys definitely went harder.
Well, the third option would have been staying exactly the same, like that's a true, fat records band, which some people, that's kind of what they did. And they ended up just not really doing much in the 2000s because it sucked. It was a fucking tough time. Yeah. You have to think like when a decade comes and goes, the following decade doesn't look too kindly on what just happened. Like it's kind of like an ex-girlfriend or something where it's like, oh, that was my favorite shit in 98, but it's 2001 now. I don't listen to that fucking shit. You know? So it's like, there was a lot of that going on, which is like, what the fuck? Like you were just our biggest fan, fucking asshole. And now you're
so
like,
last week.
Now you're bleeding mascara all over the place, you know? So it's just, you know, scenes come and go and that's okay. But we were just kind of like, well, fuck it. Like if our shit's not, if Fat Records isn't like the trendy thing anymore, if like all these other, like the stuff you're talking about is this big deal, which it certainly was at that point, then we're just going to do what we fucking like. You know, we're just going to play the shit we like the most. If no one comes to the show, that at least we get to play the shit we like the most, instead of to try to like copy like that. If we had tried to be like, I don't know, one of those sorts of bands, it wouldn't have gone well. You know, let's just put it that way. It wouldn't have been sincere. It would have been a total fake, and it would have been horrible. Oh God, that's a terrible prospect, you know? So it's, but some people even try to say Exile and Oblivion is like an emo record. Like
really?
there's people that will be like, oh yeah, Strung Out went emo. Like it's like, because of that record, and it's like maybe it has a bit of a darker vibe, but I don't think it's fucking
I was gonna say, is it because of like the dark cover and the girl on the front?
You know, and that was just kind of what it suited the vibe of the music. And like it was just, I don't know, like you had to wear spandex in the 80s and you kind of had to wear like all black in the mid 2000s. All right, so fuck you. You know, you go on Warped Tour 2005 in that fucking circus of gnarly fucking emo screamo, it was crazy, dude. The MySpace Warped Tour was so fucking gnarly, and you're just face to face with that shit every day. And it was just like, is this really going on? Is this really the fucking Warped Tour? You know? And it was a weird time for shit, dude. So you just had to like buckle down, and I just put my black shirts on and played the fastest shit I could. But like, we just tried to like keep it somewhat, I don't know. Like I feel that record we were really excited about it when we made it. We felt like it was the most excited we had been about a record since like the first record. And I feel it was just kind of like this second chapter for us.
You just brought up the Warped Tour in 2005.
Right.
So when you guys played it, did you play a lot from Exile? And did the fans react well to the new songs live?
I mean, we played probably like four or five songs off Exile on that. And because it was the current record, it had just come out like earlier that year. So right. It was cool. That record did really well as far as like sales and stuff like that. But dude, it was just a weird tour to be on because you're playing next to like Saves the Day and then like My Chemical Romance is like on the next stage. And so no one gives a fuck about Strung Out or knows you for a name or fucking any of our bands really, like straight up. Like we're playing the main stage to like 100 people and there's like 2,000 waiting for some fucking dudes in the funniest looking capri pants I've ever seen in my life about to go on. And it's just like,
I'm looking at the lineup now from that Warped Tour and it's like, there's a wide array there.
Oh, I don't even recognize any of the names.
It was rough. But like, and dude, we did all 8 weeks of that fucking thing. So holy shit. Like I had to wake up to like All American Rejects, like sound checking next to our bus. Like that's not a nice way to wake up, dude. Like I'm sorry, dude. It was fucking rough, dude. Like two or three shows in, I was like, this is going to be a long fucking summer. But we did our thing. We made some good friends. Like the Atreyu guys were super rad. Like Dropkick Murphys guys were awesome. Hung out with like some really cool dudes. But man, like it was just a weird scene. But everything had changed, you know. And a lot of that bands weren't really putting out records or touring very much, you know. No Use for a Name were on that tour with us, and they could tell you a similar story. It was just kind of like we were just holding it down, and then all this shit came back around again in the 2010s, which we knew it would, you know. Like everything kind of dies out. That shit died out, and then like NoFX, Pennywise, fucking classic 90s punk kind of came back, you know. So
yeah,
you know, it's always like a cycle like that.
We bring all this up because I feel like this time period is really important to this record. I want to go back for a second to 2002's American Paradox. So 2002, it's the hangover of the 90s, right? You guys must have gone into that album like feeling like you were on top of the world. How was going into Exile different than going into making that record?
Yeah. Oh, certainly. I mean, going into American Paradox was fucking pretty surreal. We got such a gigantic record deal from Fat for that one record. It was like bigger than most major label record deals. And it was just like, we have the money to do anything we want. We can record with whoever we want. We can take as long as we want with this fucking thing. So it was just insane. And we ended up just like partying with most of the money. And like, there was like no real quality control going on. And we recorded it with Donald Cameron, who's like an amazing dude, but like wasn't exactly like state of the art at the time. So like what we got, like the song, the material was good and stuff, but I think like what we put down on tape, it was like 75% what it should have been, you know. Like as far as, you know, I'm just looking back going, I think we were capable of 25% better than that fucking record, you know. But it was cool. But we went into it as like, yeah, like our scene was fucking huge. Like it was our time, we felt. Like we had kind of built it up. We were hoping to just be along that NoFX train of success and like go on to the next level from there. And instead it just became, you know, huge breaks on the entire fucking scene. And next, you know, like Alternative Press Magazine, who had never, I think like Limp Bizkit was on the cover, like in like December 2001. And then like February 2002, it was like Thursday. And then it was just only screamo from then.
Yeah.
It just became that scene. And it was just like, whoa, this scene. And good for those bands. Was I jealous? Sure. Fuck, we wanted that fucking shit going on. Are you fucking kidding me? But we couldn't buy, you couldn't buy that press. It was just this whole movement that just sprung up. It was just like, exploded. Wow, okay. Like, well, we don't sound like that. So I don't know if that's going to be a great thing. And we just kept doing our thing, but like we noticed like shows got smaller. You always draw your diehards and then you probably draw another like 20, 30% of people that are coming just to kind of check out a thing. And some of that portion dried up because it became more of like, we weren't on the cover of these magazines. We weren't getting this press. Mm. So that record, you know, after that, like, yeah, we didn't get that. We got a much smaller record deal next time, but it was still enough to do whatever we wanted pretty much. So we really wanted to work with this dude, Matt Hyde, who we had known from some friends' bands. We knew him as just an amazing producer, big fan of like a bunch of stuff he did. So we ended up touching base with him. And that's where the idea to, you know, do that record with someone completely different, someone totally outside of our scene. But Matt Hyde is just like the by far like the most gnarly like musical doctor like scientist we've ever worked with, and came in and just really saw what we were doing and was able to kind of take our songs apart, rearrange them,
yeah,
bring out parts that we thought were the strongest, and really just made sense of this new batch of music. And I feel really pushed it to where, you know, we had never gone before, and a level of quality that hadn't existed on the previous record for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some of those guys are like surgeons. They know where to cut and pull and yeah, pick and pry.
And he also had the craziest gear, like every guitar amp, the gnarliest pedals.
I was going to say, I've heard he has like an arsenal of pedals.
Yeah. So just amazing access to pretty much whatever tones we wanted. And he had a great ear for what the parts should have. So he would tell me, okay, Jake, for this part, you're going to use the Gretsch through the Bogner.
Oh, wow.
And then we'll use it through this and that. And he's just like, okay, let's do it. You know? So it was amazing to have someone that could really direct you and could kind of hear what I was going for and really help me find like exactly what I was trying to do.
Wow, that's great.
When you guys were in the studio with Matt and everything, was there any like a standout moments during the production or anything like that? Or, you know, something that like one particular song, like you mentioned it to earlier, like he was able to pull the strong points out. Was there something that you guys didn't think was there? And he's like, nah, dude, we got to pull this.
Yeah. I mean, God, pretty much it's hard to recall everything so well now, but pretty much every song I think had some stuff that really got elevated due to what he brought to it. And, you know, everything, like, I remember the song No Voice of Mine, we originally, it started like totally different. It started just. That riff. And then the thing that starts it, that was only in the middle of the song. And once we played it for him one time, he was like, okay, that thing in the middle, that should be your intro. Oh. That's the thing that should start it off immediately. And then it should go to this part and then save that riff until that's like right after the verse. It was like, whoa, that's super different from what we had ever played, but that actually sounds really cool.
Oh, yeah.
So we, you know, the thing with Matt was he expected you to like be a quick learner. Like he would tell you this shit and you had to like play it that way. So it was like, all right, fuck yeah, let's do it. And I love that challenge. And me and Matt had an amazing working relationship. It was, you know, awesome, but he could be very high stress. He could definitely like put the gun down on you,
yeah,
and expect fucking amazing shit. He expects performances, you know, expects professional level shit. So if you're dicking around, if you weren't giving him that, you know, he could call you out on it. So oh, wow. It was a very, yeah, but overall just an incredibly awesome, productive session.
Yes. Speaking of that song, No Voice of Mine, I love the way that starts too, with that, just that guitar riff right in there in the beginning.
Thank you.
It's killer. I think like,
yeah, like you can thank Matt for that 100% because it was not our idea.
It's great. I like it.
Yeah. It's cool. Thank you very much.
So yeah, talking about the songs a little bit and kind of talking about the time, it was interesting that you guys released Lucifer Motorcade as your first single. Was that a statement a little bit?
Yeah, I think, it was just such a gnarly, like aggressive and kind of modern song. For everything I'm saying about like the mid-2000s scene, like I feel you put that fucking song in there with anything and it'll hold its own, you know, yeah, like with some of the heavier, more aggressive or more shreddy type of things going on. That song broke some ground. And yeah, dude, I wish, you know, I mean, Fat Records, unfortunately, right then were in a position where they hadn't quite moved to like the digital age, like with, you know, the internet and all that fucking advertisement. Mm. So they were kind of lagging and it was a bummer, you know? So that record really didn't get like on the Warped Tour, it had like no push, you know, like we'd see all this shit about all these other records from all these fucking bands, and we're there on the main stage and there's like nothing for our record, you know? Mm. So Fat Records, I think, had a tent there, but it was like in the big picture, dude, because Victory Records had like semi trucks, you know, they had like shit, like blasting their fucking bands. It was just like, and that costs a lot of money. I get it. But like, you can't compete with that when you're like out there with a pop-up tent, you know? So, and just the digital age was a fucking bummer for all of us, but you had to really play that game.
Yeah.
And that's what those bands were doing. And, you know, so yeah, we just kind of like, the record did all right. I think it did like 80,000 or something, which by today's standards is like crazy. But back then we were like, we were hoping to be moving 200,000 by that time, you know? So it was all right.
Yeah. Well, 2004 was right at the start of all that digital stuff, and the way people were consuming music was changing so fast. And so one of our questions was, you know, do you remember that shift? And do you remember, I mean, you kind of said that, you know, the label wasn't pushing it maybe the way you wanted to, but this record also sits at this important moment of music being totally consumed differently by fans.
Yeah, for sure. That's why it's pretty remarkable it even sold what it did, because, you know, Napster, our first experience with Napster was like 2000, you know, someone stole an advanced copy of the Element of Sonic Defiance and like leaked it to Napster at the time. So, but still everyone got to hear it. Like by the time it came out, everyone had heard it and it was presented in like a bullshit shitty mix. It just sucked, you know? So we were aware of that whole fucking thing. And, you know, his labels didn't really, there was no magic bullet to fight against it. You know, like Lars went to Congress to try to like shut that shit down and just got hate for it, you know? So, you know, it's just one of those things where there was no, you just had to go out there and tour still. And at the end of the day, that's what we love to do. That's what I've always loved to do, is go out and tour. So that allowed us an opportunity to still do that. And to this day, we still can tour and stuff like that. So, you know, I don't even know what our records sell today. I don't even look. Mm. It's not even worth looking, you know, but they stream through, they get out there on so many other platforms that we still get money from like these other avenues now, to where it's probably like the same as it was if we were just selling records. But it's just, it's weird, dude. It's such a bizarre thing. But yeah, that early shift of it, you know, bands having, labels having websites, you know, having an internet presence was very important then. And, you know, we were all slow to that.
Mm. So back in like 2004, 2005, when all this was going on, was there any ever thought of like shifting labels, looking for a new label? And what made you guys stay with Fat?
Yeah, nothing really too much. I mean, you always entertain like maybe the thought of something, but not really. I mean, we always loved working with the people with Fat, and they always gave us complete control of stuff, of our music, of our art. And that's really something that you shouldn't, like, that can't be, you know, that can't be understated. Like, it's a huge thing to have that. Many labels want control of all that shit, and they'll fucking make you change shit straight up. So they've never done that. So that was always something where we loved working with them, and we didn't want to go somewhere where that would now be an issue or something. And, you know, I'm glad we didn't change. If we could have gone to Victory Records or one of those like hotter labels at the time, I don't think that would have worked well for us. I think at the time it maybe would have given some hype or something, but no one made any money from that fucking label anyways. Like, you know, that shit's a shit show over there as far as getting paid. So at least with Fat Records, we always got paid. Like, no matter what, our record sold, what they did, it was always 100% legit, you know? And that's something, like I said, you can't take that lightly. It's a huge relationship to have that with your label. So we're stoked we stayed there.
I think like Fat's got that, they built that following. So it's kind of like, if you're on Fat, you're like, you got that, like that in the scene type of thing.
And we did. And our band was still doing really well. It's just, I'm talking about like the Warped Tour. And when you're in that bubble, it's like, it's hard to feel like relevant at all when you're just in that fishbowl of fucking shit. But like, once we got back on our own tours, it was like, okay, this is why we do it, you know? So it was just a weird experience. But for some reason, that experience and that album are very tied together in my mind, like in my memories.
Yeah. Killer guitar work on this album. We were talking about that earlier. That solo on Blueprint
is
fantastic.
Oh, thanks, man. I appreciate that.
I'm a guitar player. Craig plays drums. Do your guitar solos come from just like countless jams, or do you like sit down to specifically write this stuff?
Yeah, I work it out. You know, like the first time we jam something, we will go, hey, this is going to be a solo section. Rob may have something. If he doesn't, I'll take it. Mm. And then, you know, right on the spot, I'll just fucking sit there and just whatever, just do some bullshit. But I'm going to take that home. I'm going to listen to it. And I'm going to start hearing things. I'm going to start hearing melodies in my head before I play anything. I'm going to have a series of different things in my head. And then when I sit down, it's just finding those. And I've gotten to a point now where I trust it completely. I think whatever I hear in my head, I don't even have to play it over the progression to check it. I know it's going to work over the progression because it's surprisingly, that's just what's developed over the last few albums, where I hear the thing and I just kind of write it on my own. And then when I come to put it down, it actually works, instead of listening and playing constantly back and forth to the verse or the, you know, the section, the lead over. So I kind of just get that section in my head. I kind of write it. And I think that happened with that. I remember coming up with the first thing, you know, the break. I just remember hearing that little start off point, and I found it. And then from there, it was just piecing it together. And I was listening to a lot of Rush, you know, at that time. I mean, I've always listened to a lot of Rush, but for some reason, I think like Alex Lifeson's, like, you know, like his shit was really in my head around that time. And I think that solo actually has a very Lifeson-esque feel to it. You know, I mean, I'm basically ripping him off of a lot of it, the finale. You know, I mean, it's pretty much the YYZ thing. So
yeah,
it's not even like I sat there and planned to do it. It just came out, you know, like it was just, I wrote these things, and you know, it's not like, I know the scale shapes, but I never think about them when I write a lead or compose a lead. I just kind of find where I'm going, and I decide in this section, it's going to be this sort of a thing over here. I'll do this sort of thing, and I'll refine it a bit, but it's definitely worked out. You know, I'm not like a right off the top of my head kind of guy, you know. But then again, like that beginning, it came right to me. So it really was the first thing I tried. It just, I sat there and lived with it for a while and came up with it, as opposed to just hearing it and jamming right on the spot.
Yeah.
And, you know, some players that are fantastic at that. And Rob Ramos is actually really great at just nailing it right off the bat.
Wow.
Yeah. Where, you know, sometimes I'll get lucky or something, but generally I like to take it home and really like work it out. And that's where I'll come up with stuff, but it's gone quicker and quicker, where I think in the older days, it took me longer to find where I wanted to go. These days, like I'm finding it a lot quicker, and it's only because I've been doing it for fucking 30 years with this fucking band, you know? So
did you like write stuff down or just keep it all in your head?
I'll record it on my phone.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like whenever I'm playing something, like when I write, when I'm always just jamming at home, just kind of playing along to stuff, watching commercials on TV, playing along to the fucking commercials. And you come up with little things, and if it catches your ear, I just record it.
Yeah.
So I have it saved in that immediate version, you know, because if I keep fucking around with it, I'm going to maybe make it too much like something else I've done, or I'm going to resort back to something. But in that immediate version, there's maybe something weird about it I'm catching that's weird that I wouldn't usually do. So I want to save that before I go on and keep writing it and keep developing it and maybe try to write the next part. Then I'll come back and forget what that first part was sometime. I'll forget what made it fucking different. So I just try to record everything with the voice recorder or with a video camera if it's like some weird riff that I don't know if I can figure out again.
You have to look at it, yeah.
Yeah, it helps to look at it.
So moving on to a different song real quick, Scarlet. I think that's one of my favorite songs on the album. I'm a drummer. I like to listen to drums, but jamming with Jed over the years, I got to listening to little guitar riffs. And I think the thing I like the most about like Scarlet, and you guys do it in some other songs too, but there's like these quick little guitar riffs that always like, they just like intrigue me when I hear them. I'm like, like usually it's coming out of a bridge or a chorus going back into
a
verse.
Transition.
Yeah. And it's just like something like or whatever it is you do. Like the beginning of Scarlet, I like the riffs there, but in the middle, there's a transition you do, and I just like, I hear it, and I'm just like, I like that. It just like, it pumps me up every time I hear it.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah, dude, it's just, you never know, like, what songs are really going to connect, and that's a fun one. I like playing that one a lot. Rob wrote that song, and yeah, it's just got a really cool feel to it. Rob's great at writing those little transitional riffs and stuff. He comes up with killer little licks into things and out of things. So yeah, they're fun. And you know, it's just little like ear candy kind of shit that makes the song a little more interesting, at least, you know, in our heads.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like I said, it's one of those things that I pick up on, you know, when I just listen, and it's like, it cues me right in. I like it.
That's awesome, dude.
And I like
it. That's a fun one to play. It's got kind of a heavy element to it, you know.
Yeah. That's a little moody, a little dark.
Yeah, it's got like a fun, just, you know, heavy kind of vibe. As a guitar player, it's fun to play.
And I like all that stuff too, because it feels purposeful. Like sometimes you just hear stuff in songs and you're like, that doesn't really need to be there. It's like in the background. It's just adding more noise to something. But I always feel like the leads that you guys come up with, you know, you and Rob, and I guess Chris too, must write a lot of stuff. And the way you find places for that really works.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's fun, man. I mean, something about when we get together, this shit just kind of writes itself. It's a weird thing, the chemistry of getting any four or five musicians in a room is going to be so different. What you'll come up with these different people, you know, and the strung out chemistry is really pretty cool because we're all coming from different places, but we all have like a similar common interest and a similar common, you know, goal that we're achieving. But on the fringes of that, it's coming from all different directions and weird things that, you know, I wouldn't be Rob wouldn't be bringing in. I would never bring in what Rob brings in. He wouldn't bring in what I bring in. It's definitely the individuals. And that's just what kind of, that's the only way to really be original, I think, is to kind of take different things and mix it in a way that hasn't been mixed. Because these 12 notes have been played so many ways, so many times. It's so easy to play in the same way, but there's still different ways, you know, and just, I can be influenced by some weird ass fucking thing I hear. And then I'm going to bring that to practice and put it in a song. And it's just like, whoa, that's really odd that that actually works. Mm,
that's cool. Yeah, because you and Rob, you guys tend to split back and forth on leads. So, I mean, like,
a bit, yeah.
Is it just kind of like, it just happens? Like, there's no rhyme or reason?
You don't duke it out, do you?
Without stepping on toes?
No, never. I think if anything, we almost like to offer our songs to the other guy. Yeah. You know, a lot of times my songs, I'll let Rob lead on and vice versa. And, you know, he gives me a lot of spots on his songs. So, It's kind of, I don't know. I think in that way, it's guaranteed to bring another influence and writer in because I'm writing these riffs. I'm writing the feel of this piece. Okay. So on the lead, why don't you be the voice? Because I'm kind of the voice on the majority of this piece. So you add your, you know, and we kind of lead over each other's songs anyways, like here and there, like coming up with those little parts you're talking about. We're always like, oh, that could use something, you know? And if anything, we have too much of that shit. Sometimes we have to take it out at the in the final mixing stages. There's too much shit going on.
I was gonna say, does it ever get too busy?
Yeah, it's like a fucking Queen record of this guitar solo, you know. You take it out and you keep the right ones because it has to sound sort of like that live too. So you take that shit out and you just kind of keep the best ones. But yeah, in the process, it's just kind of like we trade off a bit, but there's definitely no ego involved. I think if anything, it's opposite, where we want to make sure the other guy is featured on our parts, you know. But once in a while, like Blueprint, I wrote my lead to that song, which I wrote, but it just felt like it was a piece of music in the song, you know. It didn't feel like it was a foreign body. It just seemed like another connected part of the song, so it just became that. And same with Rob. Sometimes he comes in with a 100% written, completely arranged song. The fucking bass lines are written, the drum parts are written, and he'll have his lead written. And it's like, well, that fucking works perfect, so I ain't touching shit, you know. My job is easy today. So yeah, you just kind of play off each other, and we're just, you know, we're inspired by each other, and we want to, there's a healthy competition to try to be different and try to play your own way and maybe do different things than he would do. But it's always meant to complement and flatter the, you know, and make the overall song better.
That's cool. Yeah. You were saying earlier about like just getting your fingerprints on something he wrote and vice versa. That's cool.
Yeah. You want that, you know, and I like to play, even if it's like the same part, we're both playing the same exact fucking thing. I still like to play my part, and I like him to play his part, you know. No, I don't care who wrote it. We each play it a little different, and we want to sound like our band on record. We want to sound like that live. We want to sound like a two guitar band, you know. And in the old days, sometimes we would have one guy just play all the rhythms on one song because he wrote it and he kind of had the feel. And sure, it saves time, and I guess that was a little more important in the old days. But these days, it's so easy to go in and fix shit and just record shit. And everything's done quicker now, to where I just want to play my half of the part. I want Rob to play his half of the part. So it sounds like two players and it sounds like strung out, you know?
Yeah.
And instead of like one guy playing every part, like, you know, I could go in and play the bass. I could play both guitars. I could play it all. And it would sound like one fucking guy, but I don't want to sound like one guy. You know, I want to sound like the band. So it's important to always very much value your co-players.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And then playing off the other instruments, the bass, the drums. Does Jason ever come in and be like, hey, I kind of hear this guitar thing happening? Does he ever do that?
Yeah, he'll have ideas, you know, and everyone's pretty much free to throw in their idea.
Yeah.
And that's where you have to kind of yield to the producer a lot. You have to really trust your producer. You have to really respect them, and you have to yield to them, because they're going to be that deciding factor a lot of the time. They're going to be that, you know, mediator where maybe two guys can't agree even on this part fucking working. And this guy's able to see it in a way where, as an outsider, he's not attached to it, you know, anyway, except for thinking, does it help the song or does it hurt the song? And you have to respect what he says and that call he makes. You know, he's like the judge.
Yeah.
You know, he's the fucking ump. He's the ref. So you have to respect that. If the guy doesn't know what he's talking about, then don't fucking have him on your record.
Yeah.
but work with people that are better than you, you know, work with someone that knows more about shit than you do. Like that's what I have to do. And in my case, it's not hard because I'm a dumbass.
So when you guys were compiling the track order on Exile, and you started off analog with this that record playing song in the beginning, and then it just jumps right into the song.
Right.
What was the thought of it? Because it just hits you as soon as the song starts. It's like, boom, here we are.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely the counter to it, and it's unexpected. I think the main thing was it was unexpected. Like, we always like samples on records, you know, and doing Element of Sonic Defiance, there was a lot of samples on that record. Yeah. So it was kind of like, you know, carrying some of that vibe with it. And the Billie Holiday track, I think it was Jason that presented it. I don't know who else would have, but I think it was him that presented it. And I don't know what made it so we were just decided to just make it that abrupt cut. But somewhere it was decided and it fucking worked awesome.
Yeah,
you know,
it's awesome.
And I remember hearing it and just really liking it. And yeah, it was cool, you know, and it's now it's just a great thing to where if you're a fan of the band and you hear that part, you know exactly what's coming.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's cool too, just the way it just punches in, it like smacks you in the face. You're like, here we are, let's go. We're ready to rock. And it's like,
totally right.
Yeah. Let's go.
I think it may have been taken off some records though, because I think there may have been some lawsuit stuff going on. So I don't know, like if you buy that record or track or whatever today, I don't know if it comes with that.
I don't think it does, because I had an MP3 version of the song and that wasn't on there. Yeah,
really? Yeah, I think it might have gotten taken off. I think
Billie Holiday's camp was like, hey.
You guys were selling 80,000 records,
yeah,
which is nothing.
I need my 1% of 1%.
Yeah, exactly.
That's funny.
But yeah, I mean, you know, you can try to pull that shit off, but you usually get caught if you're like using a track and it's like, you know, you don't clear it. I guess we didn't clear it. Sorry.
Yeah.
but you guys heard it. Like, everyone's kind of heard it. So like, it's still kind of just known.
Definitely. You were talking about how Matt is, you know, really pushing you guys to give your best performance. Yeah. You know, when you guys play live, you look comfortable up there, you're playing. Is it hard to be under the microscope like that in a studio and get those leads down?
Well, you know, if you're unprepared, it can be a fucking nightmare. Oh, yeah. So it's all about, and I stress this with all my guitar students, you always need to practice with a metronome. You need to do everything you do with a metronome pretty much at all times. Like I almost feel I'm wasting time if I'm playing guitar at all without it on, you know, and it's just because it's constantly reassuring you of where you need to be. And just, you know, for what I do, the mechanics of it are pretty important. You know, it's pretty high performance. Like you miss one little thing, you get hooked up on one little thing and you're fucking off.
Yeah.
So yeah, dude, like the first couple records, it was like, whoa, dude, this click thing is fucking intimidating as fuck. And it was just gnarly. And we didn't even use it that much on those records. But when we put it on for certain sections, it was like, whoa, dude, like this sucks. Like,
yeah.
I'm off. Like, it's just, you know, if you're unprepared. So I really did my homework and started using it all the time to where if I have a session coming up, I'm going to drill that shit to where, you know, now we pretty much know what the tempo is going to be and stuff. Back then you didn't really know, but you just drill it to that click and get yourself to where when you get under the gun with that click in the studio, you're on it, you know, and you're not going to fall off it. So it takes doing your homework and being prepared. You know, any drummer will tell you that it's super crucial for drummers to be on with the click. So
I love a click.
You know, most drummers, they're always, you know, on with that shit. If you're a studio drummer, it's everything, you know? So yeah, dude, they're definitely, there's a little intimidation, but by that point, I was pretty versed with that. I was pretty familiar with it, you know, doing the records we had done. Yeah. So, and I just felt comfortable with Matt and like everything it was more creative than like technically drilling or something like that. Like Suburban, that was a hard record to make because it was just so fast technically, you know, like tonality, it sucks. It's like one amp and it's like, you know, it's just fucking one vibe. It sounds like a drum machine, but it was hard to fucking do. Where that record wasn't really that hard. Like I could play the parts all right. Like, you know, it's more creative and it's more like, let's fuck around with the tones.
That's cool.
Let's, you know, let's, I was doing more leads at that point. So that was fun. So that record was really my first like lead guitar record. You know, I American Paradox have a couple leads, but nothing much, and they're not very good. But that one, I definitely put some more work into it. I grew into a better player from that record. And yeah, you know, it was really just drilling it. But Matt was very, very encouraging and very nurturing to my improvement, for sure.
I can't say enough about the guitar work on this record. So it's just so great. Yeah. And it sounds well, so good.
Thank you. Yeah, man, it's cool. And the mix of it, I like the mix. It's not like the best mix as far as hearing everything, because the tones on that record are phenomenal. And, you know, when you hear, you're kind of hearing like, you know, you're hearing them, but I feel like, you know, I wish they really came through a bit more. But it's, I wish it was a little bit of a bigger, less compressed sound.
Is that
record.
In mix or is that in mastering, you think?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Could be mastering. Yeah. Could be the mix. I mean, it always sounds great when you're in the studio, like mixing it.
Yeah,
like,
and those big
you
speakers.
Never leave there going, ah, all right, let's just fucking run it. You never fuck. You're like, okay, it's the best thing we've ever done, you know? And then you get the master and you're like, oh, my car doesn't sound like that fucking room sounded at all.
Yeah.
You know? And,
why is it so
quiet?
My
headphones sound worse, you know? It's like, you never hear that same fucking thing again. But, you know, that's just the nature of it. And I actually like the sound of the record. Like, I remember I got some shit from people. But I never thought it sounded like that bad, you know. Could it be better? Sure. Like, I think Transmission Alpha Delta is the best sounding thing we've ever done. But that record, for what it was, is, you know, and Matt Hyde was also transitioning from analog to digital. It was kind of this weird time, and that was one of the earlier records he did digital with Pro Tools, you know. But we were still doing the drums on tape, and a lot of guitar was on tape. So, yeah, it was a transitional time, you know.
Oh, so you did do the drums on tape. So I was looking at it. Looks like you guys did... You used a lot of different studios to record, like drums at Sound City, guitars at Platinum Sound, and then vocals at Hideaway Studios. So was this the first time you guys utilized like a bunch of different studios?
Yeah, I guess so. Like, we had used some pretty big fancy ones in the early days, and then we used West Beach, which is one little room. So yeah, this was one of the first ones where it was multi-studio, and Matt really wanted to go into a big, nice studio to get the drums. Mm-hmm. So that's what Sound City was. And then we did the guitars, and literally it was just like an industrial building, just like a lockout room, an industrial building that I guess was a studio. It was next to a Mexican place. That's all I remember is good Mexican food.
Oh, nice. But that's a staple.
You guys ate like, well.
Yeah, yeah. It was a nice feature. It's very nice to be close there. Yeah, just small little room. Had the guitars just isolated in a small little room. You know, nothing was direct. It was all tube amps and stuff. But and then the third one, Hideaway Studio, that's literally Matt's at his house. That's like next to his garage, like his mixing stuff that he had in his house. So that's where they would do the vocal in a mixing booth or isolation booth. And then he would mix it there. But I think this is one of the first things he mixed at his house. So, you know, like I said, it was all very transitional and experimental kind of, and you know, what we got out of it was magic. But in the, you know, in the final phase, in the mastering of the mix, just, you know, maybe it could have gotten a little extra attention in some things, but I can pick apart all of our records as far as mix.
Oh, of course. Yeah, sure.
I'm more happy with that one than
in hindsight.
So yeah. I'm there's only really one record I like better than that one, which is Alpha Delta, you know, sonically.
Yeah.
So, and then Matt on the next one on Blackhawks sounds fucking perfect. You know, whatever's a little weird about the Exile mix, Blackhawks, you know, we smoothed that shit over on that one. That one's probably our best sounding record next to Transmission. You know, I put those like right next to each other.
Yeah, it must have felt like it had like a bit more warmth.
It did. It just, and more clarity, more consistency. I think something about Exile, like some songs, the kick drum is like louder than others. And some songs, like certain things are not the same as they are the previous track, which is, it's kind of strange, but it's got that to it where, The following one, it's pretty much, it sounds like an album. It sounds like every song is, you know, equal. But I don't like the material as much. I don't like the material on Blackhawks near as much as the material on Exile, you know.
So if only you could get the sound of Blackhawks with the songs from Exile, you'd have like, the perfect
song. Well, it just shows the production really doesn't make the record. Like, it helps it. It's nice.
Yeah.
But if it's not great tracks, it doesn't make it better. And a song, an album with a shoddier production, if the songs are fucking better, that album will go further.
That's true. Yeah.
Jumping back to songs a little bit, the song Anna Lee, was that about the actress Anna Lee? or was that somebody?
Yeah, I don't know. That's Jason writes all our lyrics, you know. So I never really get an exact like on what they are, but like you can kind of make out a lot of like, you know, what he's getting at. That one I really can't tell you. You know, I was never aware of an Anna Lee in our circle. Never heard anything about an Anna Lee. So yeah, that's one you'd have to ask Jason on. But
it's just kind of catchy in the middle when it's like Anna Lee and it's like going on. It's like, yeah, it's catchy, right.
Oh, that's the, yeah. That's
well, like Virginia song. Madison, like that's a fictional character, right. You know, that song is written about. It's a story, you know? Mm-hmm. So it could be something like that. But that being said, it sounds like there's definitely something behind Anna Lee. Like, it's being directed at something.
Yeah.
It's not as like it's not as fictional like fantasy as like Virginia. It's a little more on the nose.
Yeah.
So you'll have to ask Jason about that.
Jason knows. Well, I get the feeling that he was really inspired by like Edgar Allan Poe. I mean, Annabelle Lee is close to Anna Lee, and you've got these dark tones. Right. There are some songs that, makes some sense. That are dark, and
yeah, that would actually make some sense, right?
I always picked up on that, but
yeah, that could definitely be.
And how did Matt help out with that song?
With Anna Lee, what did Matt?
I heard that he contributed
that
a lot to that one, like either music-wise or lyrically.
That was actually, what I remember about that song is that Jason actually brought the music from that song to us, which it hasn't happened all that much, you know. And it was just kind of like the basic. Anybody had the verse and melody, so he just kind of had these like you know bar chord kind of rhythms. So me and Rob just took those. And Rob kind of added the little da 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 little riff to it. But it's based off of Jason's stuff. And then the chorus, Jason had that, you know. So it was really just Jason brought in this pretty worked out piece of music. And then he had all the lyrics done. So Matt, I think, just kind of kept his arrangement. It starts with the vocal, comes right in with that part. No intro kind of thing. So I think that song came together pretty quickly because it's pretty stock, you know. It doesn't have like any weird kind of shit. It's pretty verse chorus.
It's pretty straightforward.
It's got
that
bridge. You know, it's got that bridge, which I think that's a Rob part. That sounds like a Rob part. So we kind of just added that in for like a little lick in the middle of the song to make another part out of. But yeah, that one, I don't know. Matt probably just overall just kind of went with Jason's idea since he had like a bit of an arrangement. And then just kind of, you know, put that middle part together with us. But yeah, that one I think was just kind of a, you know, little more on the just came together. You know, we didn't fuck around with it. Like Never Speak Again, I remember that song we fucked around with for a long time. You know, and some of the songs we definitely like, you know, took some time and like really like tore apart and tried different arrangements with and stuff.
Yeah,
and
that's cool.
Yeah, I think Anna Lee was pretty much, you know, what Jason brought in.
Nice.
Swan Dive, powerful nod to the late Jim Cherry. What was the genesis of this song?
Yeah, Swan Dive, that was a piece of music that Rob wrote. And yeah, Jason, like most of our songs, like Anna Lee's an exception where Jason brought in a piece of music. Pretty much everything else is stuff that we write and we just write the music together. We arrange it in a way that makes sense. And then we give it to Jason and he takes it home and writes pretty much all the melody and lyrics on his own. So that was one where we did that. We wrote all the music. Matt pretty much left that, I think, pretty close to what Rob came up with. That's a Rob song. So being like it's a pretty, you know, standard kind of four chord song, Matt didn't really get too weird with that one. We wrote it, we gave it to Jason, and then, yeah, it just has a really just emotional kind of feel to it, you know? So I think that's where the lyrical content kind of tied in. And Jason's always been awesome at taking the feel of our music, you know, since we just create these pieces. He takes the vibe of that really – sum it up with the words and the melody. So he's always been great at, you know, adding that extra layer to our songs where, you know, some singers, they kind of just sing along with what the guitar's doing or something. They just kind of, you know, it's like another instrument, but it's not really breaking its own melody.
Right.
And Jason's always really come from like outside where you might think the vocal would go over this lick or over this progression, which is great. You know, I think that's a really cool way to approach a song.
Yeah.
Not really thinking about, you know, the melody of the music itself, just what other melody works over this and twists over this. And
I think that's what makes them unique too, is when, you know, the songs and the riffs are playing, the vocals add a whole nother harmony and a whole nother layer.
Right.
That could be, it's really its own instrument, you know?
Totally, totally. And that's where Matt really shined as well, because Matt, having such an amazing ear, he had a keyboard right by his computer. So when Jason would be recording, Matt had this little keyboard that he'd be like, oh, the melody. So the melody's ding, 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 ding. And then Jason would sing it and match those notes, note for note, you know, take it line by line. And if he was a little off, no, it's right here. Ding, 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 ding. So instead of Matt having to like sing it to him or try to like possibly give him the wrong thing,
just play it.
Play it to that keyboard. And then, you know, exactly, here's your guide.
Yeah.
You know,
that's awesome.
So Matt could hear, Matt understands theory way better than any of us. So he knew what chords we're using, what stuff we're using, what's aligning. So he was able to go, well, the vocals, these scales work well over that, you know, where we would just have to trial by error until we get it right.
Yeah, that's huge.
He actually recognized what it was and could play it on the keyboard, and Jason would sound, you know, sing the words to the keyboard.
Wow.
That's cool. Yeah.
I think that's what Kanye West does too. Not as well.
But with a lot more auto-tune. Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Exactly.
How did the art come together? I mean, this cover, I think, you know, some album covers just go perfectly with the music. And I love the colors.
Yeah.
You know, this has always been one of my favorite strung out covers. It perfectly encapsulates what's on this disc.
Thank you. Yeah, I agree. It's just like, whoa, that's fucking gnarly. And sounds kind of gnarly too. So yeah, I think but it has a beautiful quality to it. And from what I remember, I think it's maybe our only album cover that's not a piece of Jason's art.
I was going to ask about that. Yeah.
Someone else's art.
Who was it?
Yeah, that's I believe she was a neighbor of Jason's. I forget her name, but she was an artist, and he saw that piece and was like, I love this. I need to use this. So we bought it. And yeah, the first time I saw it, I was like, whoa, that's pretty fucking brutal. Mm. Like, I love it though. Like, it's rad. And definitely kind of, you know, speaks to the vibe of this a little bit. Like, I mean, it could be a fucking black metal record cover or some shit, you know, but it's obviously not that brutal of a record, but it kind of worked with the feel. And so, yeah. And next thing we knew, let's see the rest of it. Like, the rest of that album is just kind of, it's just like dark photos, dark kind of imagery, like, you know, but the album cover itself, it's one of the only times, if not the only time, that Jason didn't actually paint it himself.
Mm. That's cool.
Yeah. But he must have seen it and just felt the same thing. Like, wow, this dude, I can't better, you know, visualize what I'm hearing than this does.
And it's cool that he was able to kind of step aside and recognize that some other art by some other artist worked in that situation.
Totally. So that's cool. Absolutely. Well, you know, I think he's never been someone like, we're all very much just fans of, you know, art and music as much as we're lucky enough to get to do it. Mm-hmm. We're just fans of it. So I think when we see things and we're inspired by it, we wear it on our sleeves still, like, you know, like, and yeah, for him, I think he probably saw that and was just like, I love this so much. Let me put this out there where even some people might see it that wouldn't see it otherwise.
Yeah.
So
that's cool.
Yeah. You know, it's a nice way to be, you know, it doesn't always have to be you and all the focus be on you or something like that. You know, like, that's why, you know, going back to the guitar solos, I don't need every fucking solo. I'd be happy for someone else to do one right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Passing it off.
Yeah, exactly. Cool.
All right.
So stepping forward into the future to present day a little bit, what are the plans for Strung Out? You guys got any tours maybe planned now that things are coming back to normal?
Yeah.
You guys doing anything together as a group? Just giving lessons?
We've got a few things coming up this year. Not much. We have a European tour, which will be fun. It was postponed for like 3 years now, you know? So we have that in August. We have maybe some US dates after that we're talking about, and a couple shows.
Maybe some East Coast?
Opening.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's see. East Coast, I think we're talking about maybe doing some stuff in September or November. So
sweet.
Yeah, we'll still be announcing things and stuff like that. As far as a new record, I don't know. We wrote like a dozen new songs and gave them to Jason like over a year ago. So we're just waiting for him to kind of go record it and see what happens. But I really don't know. I'm not sure if we're going to do another record this year or possibly next year, but I don't have a timeline, you know, it's kind of, everyone's kind of just like this pandemic just kind of put people back a
mellowed
little bit
everybody out.
Where, Rob is really involved in his work now with his movie lighting job. He does lights for the movie studios out here. So it's a fantastic gig.
That's cool.
So he's really doing a lot of that. He's hitting it hard. Jason's been doing his thing. He's got a family. So we had a meeting last year and it kind of went like, we're not going to do many tours over like 2 weeks. And that basically means we're not going to tour at all, you know, maybe here or there. So it's kind of winding down it a bit in that sense. But I'm personally playing with other groups. You know, I'm playing with Me First and the Gimme Gimmes.
Oh,
I'm
nice.
Playing with
nice.
The Implants. I'm doing some stuff. And I've got a ton of new material for Strung Out. So it's just going to make – we got to make our schedules work, you know. And if Strung Out's not going to be active like we kind of decided last year, then I need to take other work. And I've been blessed to have the Gimmes take me on. So
that's rad, yeah.
It's a fantastic fucking time, man. It's a fucking dream to play with those dudes. It's so cool. It's so fun.
That's a whole nother episode right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally, man. It's been a blast. I did a big tour with them last year, opening up for Flogging Molly, which was fucking gnarly, dude. And I needed it so bad. I needed to get back on the road so bad. And to be a part of such a cool operation was rad. So got some shows coming up with them in March. I'm going to Europe with them in May through June, I think. And, you know, got to figure out some things that might conflict with some Strung Out stuff, but it's just going to, you know, I'll make time for Strung Out, of course, whenever I can, but I also need to tour.
Yeah,
you know?
You got to get out there.
Get that itch, right?
So we're just going to keep busy, but everyone's doing their thing. Everyone's healthy. Everyone's happy. So we're going to make it work. But, you know, no matter what, I'm going to be playing as much guitar as possible.
That's awesome. That's good to hear.
Yeah. I'm psyched that you said Implants, man. They put out like a fantastic album and then kind of...
Dude.
So
yeah, they're awesome.
That excites me.
Yeah, I've only played one show with them, and yeah, they kind of slowed down a bit. Well, I mean, the pandemic fucked everything up, you know. But now it's like it's kind of getting people back into the mode and into the swing, and those guys as well are a little more just at chill mode right now. But dude, I'm so excited to work with them because they fucking write fantastic stuff.
Yeah.
It's high performance, fast ass, melodic, shreddy guitar stuff, you know, like learning their shit has been a challenge, and that's always fun, you know. You got to challenge yourself with yourself with other things. So you know, it's gonna be fun, you know. I have that outlet. I've still got Strung Out, you know. Strung Out's gonna be definitely a busy thing, probably more so next year. I'm thinking this year just kind of slowly getting back into the groove, but next year probably a lot more.
Cool. That's awesome. That's great to hear.
So I can report it this time.
Yeah. Well, awesome, Jake. It's always a great time talking to you, man. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, Jed, thank you guys so much. Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure. And yeah, dude, hit me up anytime. I'm literally giving guitar lessons and learning songs and looking to talk about it.
Love to get you back on and talk about Agents. I love that album.
Yeah, that'll be a fun one.
We'll probably go through all of them, man, at some point. You're going to be like, sick of us.
No, dude, it's fun. Are you kidding? The fact that anyone loves these records and wants to talk about them as much as I do, like that's I'm just humbled by that fact. I'm always inspired by it, and nothing would make me happier than getting to play these songs for you guys sometimes.
They're great. I mean, Jed and I, we started listening back in the 90s in high school.
Yeah,
and,
I think we told you last time. We're just
stuck with it, you know?
We've got such a bond over Strung Out, the two of us. Like, we've been listening to you guys forever and talking about you guys and following every new album that comes out. You know, we're... Wow. Hey, man, have you heard
that
Strung Out?
Man. Yeah. It's funny because you just try to make stuff that you dig, and you just try to make stuff that makes you feel like, hey, okay, cool, I didn't waste my day.
Yeah.
And to have it connect with someone else that really gets so much out of it, that's always just been a gnarly, gnarly surprise and an amazing, like, just, it makes me feel like I haven't wasted my fucking life, you know? Like, we've created something that will survive me, and the fact you guys even care about it, the fact people care and still come out and support us like they do, it's been incredible, and I thank, you know, all our fans so much for doing that for us.
That's
still
awesome.
Being there,
that's good. It's rad.
But yeah, dudes, we're still got a lot more, you know, we still got gas in the tank.
Good to hear.
That's good to hear.
Very good to hear.
Yeah,
awesome, Jake.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right, dudes, we'll have a good one, and we'll be in touch. I'll see you guys soon.
Absolutely.
All right, thanks so much, appreciate it, Jake.
Awesome.
All right, fellas, have a good one.
Take care, Jake.
Take care.
Thank you.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Bye.
All right, well, that concludes our chat with Jake Kiley of Strung Out on Exile of Oblivion. Craig, that was a lot of fun, man.
It was fun. Jake's a good talk. He's always got some good stories, and I like hearing his his interpretation of the songs and his, you know, the times that they had playing. It was fun.
Yeah, he's great. I could listen to him talk all day. And I totally geek out on like that. How did you write this? How did you do that? Like, I had to rein it in a little bit because I honestly would have been like, take me through, you know, note for note, that blueprint solo. Like, how did you, and like, how did you remember it? And every time you get up on stage, how do you remember it? I mean, I don't know, maybe improvises sometimes, but I'm so fascinated by that stuff.
It's good, you know, and then the quick little riffs there, it's like, being a drummer, I like listening for those riffs and then to see you geek out over them. It's like, oh yeah, that's why I like them too.
Hear what he's doing right there? Yeah.
Keep doing that.
Yeah. Well, anyway, man, that was a lot of fun. Craig, I'd like to thank you for hanging out tonight and chatting with me about Strung Out and hanging with Jake. This was a lot of fun.
Thanks, Jed. It was awesome being back on the podcast. Thanks again for having me along.
I'm going to keep asking you back, man, until you tell me to knock it off.
I'll keep coming here.
And I'm also going to nag you for artwork every week because, Craig, you do such a great job. I have to thank you again, a second thank you, because you do wonderful things to make the podcast look pretty and, you know.
I was slacking last week, Jed. I'm sorry for last week for putting all the pressure on
your
shoulders.
People can tell when I do it because it's stick figures and...
Oh, it was a busy week. I'm sorry. I apologize. I'll make sure I start this one early.
It's all good. All right. I would like to thank Jake, obviously, for joining us tonight. I would like to thank Krista Makes from Less Than Jake for the theme music. Lastly, I would like to thank all of you. Thank you so much for tuning in to Talking Records and giving us this opportunity to talk about this music that we love, share our stories, geek out over metal riffs and drum parts. And, you know, talk to our heroes, talk to the people who inspired us to make music, talk to the people who inspired us to do this podcast, because without their music and without their generosity, we wouldn't be able to do this. And of course, we wouldn't be able to do it without you. So thank you for listening. If we could ask you one more favor, Craig, what's that favor going to be?
Follow us on the socials. Check us out. Instagram, Facebook, Talking Records Podcast. You can check out the website, talkingrecordspodcast.com. Buy some merch. Sign up for the mailing list, which we don't have, and, you know, comment on some of our threads. We'll love you.
Well done, Craig. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. Take care. And you're listening to Talking Records, an album deep dive podcast, where we choose records and then go dig up everything we can about them.